Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of the Comixologist interview series that we do. And today we have an interview of post-apocalyptic proportions with the writer of 28 Days Later, Michael Allen Nelson. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well, thanks. So this week we're doing a 28 Days Later sale. And for those who don't know, 28 Days Later was a movie, and Boom Studios did a series. How many issues was it? It wasn't 28 issues, was it?
No, it was 24 altogether.
24, just shy of 28 issues later. So,
yeah.
So, and this was a sequel to the movie.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Did this ignore 28 weeks later, or does this actually tie into?
No, it actually ties into it. Basically, the comic series that I wrote bridges the gap between the two movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts after the events of the first movie, but well before the events of the second movie. And then once we get towards the end of the comic series, it brushes up against the second movie and sort of runs parallel. The events in the second movie kind of run in the background. So you know, because it's all within that universe and within that timeline.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you a big fan of the movies?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The first movie is still to this day one of my favorites. And I remember when I heard that Boom was acquiring the license to do the comic, you know, I remember, you know, going to the office and saying, when do I start writing? Of course, they laughed at me because, you know, it's a high profile license, and they were kind of looking for a high profile writer. So, but I went ahead and I wrote a little, spec story to show them what I could do with their character and in their universe. And they really liked it, so decided to go ahead and let me write the series. But it was one of those things where once I heard they did it, because I am such a huge fan, I really, really wanted to write the series. So even though they told me no, I ignored them and started writing for it anyway. So,
well, I'm glad you did, because actually I remember when we started working on it, I started reading it, and I really, really loved that book. And that was at a time, like, that book came out at a time when zombie series, like, 28 Days Later had really kind of reignited the whole zombie series, I think, in popular media, like, in comic book. Like, after that, a bunch of comic books started popping up with zombie themes, and they remade all the, those Romero movies. And it was nice, because when this book came out, I was, like, I was really afraid it was going to be another, you know, another, like, take on zombies that had already been, you know, done over and over again. And it was really refreshing, because it really held on to that tone of the movie and was still something very unique and different and totally twisted.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that was the idea, is that we, you know, my job as the writer was to make sure that it captured the tone of that of the movie, because I remember that was one of the first things that I was told right off the bat. They're like, look, you know, the higher ups, pretty much, they said that even if they don't see any infected or any zombies, that's fine. It has to be about the characters, because that's what makes the movie so great, is that it's about the characters. It's about the people that are going through this horrible situation. To give you a perfect example, like, my favorite scene from the movie is when Mark is sitting down and he and Selena are explaining basically what happened. He had just woken up, to discover, you know, London's completely abandoned. And so he's like, what the hell is going on? And Mark says, well, I've got some bad news for you. And there's this soft, quiet moment where they're explaining it, and the actor is actually, he's telling him about how he lost his family at a train station, basically. And what makes that so powerful is because that actually goes against the rule of storytelling.
I got to say, one of my favorite scenes in the book is, like, towards the beginning of the series when they're all together, and Selena had killed that woman's, was it her husband or her friend or something like that? But she, when they have this big fight with all these infected, she bites Selena and then tells everybody that she is infected, that one of the infected bit her, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
that's
Yeah.
my favorite moment in like any zombie comic ever. And it was so good.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's funny because I had the idea of somebody doing that in a zombie apocalypse for a while, and actually wrote it was I think it was the last zombie tale that I ever wrote, called Backbiter, which is basically the same situation, but it was before I ever did was ever on 28 Days Later, and it was basically about two girls sort of fighting over the same guy in the zombie apocalypse, and one of them figures out, well, if I bite this other girl, they'll think she's infected, and we'll have to kill her or get her out of the party. And I thought, what a, why not use that in 28 Days Later? Because it's something that has, especially in that situation, because the woman's name was Trina, and she was just very upset because I believe it was Hirsch that was killed. And spoiler for those that
Yeah, spoiler
haven't
alert.
read it yet. But anyway, so she exacts her revenge, and how does she do it? It's not just enough to, I mean, she could have easily stabbed Celine in the back of the head or whatever, but no, it was that hate-filled, visceral, I want everybody to kill you. I want you to know what it was like to be the guy that you killed. And it was all just in that. Because my favorite part of that scene isn't so much the biting, but it's the moment where Derek and Clint are looking at Trina, and they're like, "We got a problem with her because we've got infected outside, but she's not looking at the infected. She's looking at Selena. It's kind of like she's not focused on saving herself. She's focusing on doing harm to Selena." And for me as a writer, that's the fun. It's sort of like finding those great character moments and how to really twist the knife. For your characters in that horrible situation like that. So I'm really glad you dug the scene. That's cool.
Yeah, that I mean, oh, so good, so good. And there's so many great scenes like that in that book that, I mean, I really wish stuff like that was more like just showing like how messed up people can be when in like the society. Like Walking Dead does that a lot, but they never, I don't know, like they have like a gang, a mob mentality to it, but they never, I feel like they never really like get into the individual like psychosis of some of what people might actually like do in this like crazy situation where, you know, they have to kill their loved ones.
Right. Yeah, I think that. I mean, to me, that's the whole point of telling an apocalyptic story. It's sort of, it's a study in what humanity will do to itself, in order to survive. What are the lines that we don't cross in a civilized society, but that we but when the veneer of civilization is gone, what lines will we cross? And it's sort of like, how do we how we vacillate between wanting to hold on to some semblance of society and not wanting to cross those lines, but yet wanting to stay alive and wanting to to not go hungry or not be eaten, so we have to cross those lines, and sometimes that means like you said, killing your loved ones. And so that's the fun of exploring it. And you get great character stuff out of it because it's sort of running from zombies is a lot of fun, but it can get old after a while, and so it's all about the characters and what they're going through amidst all of that running from the zombies that makes the story compelling and enjoyable to read, I think, anyway.
Now, did you there since there were multiple endings to 28 Days Later, did you end up following like picking one of them and writing from that, or did you just completely ignore them?
I kind of went from the theatrical ending, where they all get rescued.
Yeah.
I know that there were other endings that they were toying with, but I just went ahead and went off of that ending because I think that's the ending that they preferred. Like that's the theatrical ending, that's the ending that you go off of, because that's why I sort of like tangentially mention them throughout the series, because it's kind of like, well, what happened to Jim and Hannah? And even though I wasn't allowed to do anything with those characters in the series, I was still able to sort of like I said, tangentially mention them to kind of give an idea of what possibly happened to them. So that way, if there was ever a chance to go back and tell their story, it's something that I could do. So I basically went off the theatrical ending of the film.
Yeah, right, rather than the car, wasn't there an ending where they got in a car crash at the end and all died?
Yeah. Well,
I was
there's
like,
the
that was the
scene where.
lamest ending.
Well, because I think they are in a car crash after at the end of the film, where they're escaping you know, suddenly it's screaming drive, drive, and then, you know, they hit something and you see them fly and the frame stops. And then, of course, it's Jim waking up again, just like he did earlier in the movie. But this
right.
time, instead of waking up in the hospital, he wakes up in bed and all's right in the world. So,
right. Silly. So where do you go from writing zombie books? Like, are you working on anything right now that you can actually talk about?
Well, the book that I'm working on now is Valen the Outcast, and I suppose technically it's a zombie book, but not in the sense that most zombie fans would think of as a zombie book, because basically it's the idea of a king who's killed by a necromancer and is brought back to life as his undead thrall, but the king finds a way to get out from underneath the necromancer's control and is now on this epic quest to regain his soul. So even though he is undead and a zombie, basically, it's not quite the lumbering zombie apocalypse most, you know, readers are probably used to.
Right. He's more of a lich in that case, right?
Yeah, that's actually probably, yeah, I would say more of a lich. That's probably the best way to describe
it. Which is nothing like a zombie in the end.
No. You know, well, it's funny because for me, you know, especially with 28 Days Later, I know a lot of people are like, well, they're not zombies, they're infected, which is true. You know, I mean, obviously that's the company line. But for me, a zombie means mindless, not necessarily dead. And so that's why I think that you can use the term zombie when referring to 28 Days Later and still be correct, even though they're called infected, because they're mindless. They don't have any control over what they're doing. And so that's why, personally, I mean, that's just me personally. I mean, obviously, there are other people that will probably disagree and have, you know, tomes of reference material to back up their claims. So, but, you know, I just think using the term zombie is just fine.
So what kind of books do you read to, or are you reading lately, like, to help yourself writer, or just for fun?
Well, you know, I try to read a little bit of everything. You know, right now, I'm reading, as far as comics, like I'm reading Scalp, and I'm also reading Birds of Prey. I'm also reading, I'm trying to learn how to speak Japanese, so I'm reading little Japanese children's books.
Oh, really?
I've also started rereading the Iliad, so, you know, it's sort of like all over the place. I just finished reading Richard III recently.
Oh, really?
For some inspiration as far as, you know, how to be an evil king. And, you know, it's, you know, you get inspiration from everywhere. And so, and I try not to focus my reading on just one genre. I try to spread it out because there are great stories everywhere, all over the place. And, you know, it just, if you focus too much on one specific genre, I mean, that's fine. It's good to have a favorite, but there are great stories outside of that as well. And so, and I think you get a different kind of inspiration and a different set of ideas when you go outside of your comfort zone like that. So if anybody can recommend any good romance, let me know. I'm curious. I haven't read any since college. You know, when I was in college, there was a popular media course that I took, and the professor was really big on that. Like, look, I get it that you like horror or fantasy or whatever, but seriously, read something else. You know, there's actually good stuff out there. And another thing, you have to devote, you know, the next year of your reading life to reading something that you're not really interested in. But, you know, every once in a while, it's good to try something new.
Yeah. Well, you know, they did that Pride and Prejudice and Zombies book that was wildly popular. You could probably turn a Nicholas Sparks book, like turn The Notebook into a zombie apocalypse movie.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see sort of like my child's first zombie survival guide, you know, sort of like, because you know, you see zombie survival guides for adults and things like that, but it's like, well, what if you're a kid and your parents have been eaten by zombies? What do you do? Well, I think there needs to be a kid zombie survival guide, you know, sort of like help them. You know, it's sort of like, you know, it's like my child's first zombie apocalypse. You know, it's like we you know, we teach them, you know, their phone number and their address when they're very, very young. And the thing is, what's great is that's something that they will remember forever. I'll give you an example. Like, I can tell you my phone number and address from the house that I lived in and moved out of when I was 8 years old. So it's been decades since I've been there. But I can recite it like nothing else. I can't tell you my last phone number that I had 2 years ago or address or anything like that, but that I can remember. So I think that instilling this sort of like you always go for the head when it comes to a zombie, I think you can really do a good job of instilling that in an early age. And I think it would be great to see that. So.
Yeah. Telling a kid that their parents are going to die is usually usually makes for a slightly more mature book. Most of the time, when they're that young, they're not ready to accept that.
Yeah, that's probably true. It's probably not something that most parents would want to give the children anyway, because it would mean that, well, A, they've been eaten by zombies and are now trying to probably eat their own children. So, yeah, you're probably
yeah,
right. Probably not going
to
be
that. Be sure to shoot mommy and daddy right in the head.
Exactly. Yeah, that could actually backfire.
yeah, that could. And that's a good place to end this today. Thank you very much for coming and talking to us. And make sure that everybody checks out the 28 Days Later sale that's going on right now.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.